Hello friends, Denny Pruto here with a lesson on Genesis chapter 20, verses 1 through 18. This lesson is a follow-up to the lesson from Genesis chapter 12 and verses 10 through 20, where Abraham and Sarah first implemented their deception and conspiracy in Egypt. They perpetrated a fraud against Pharaoh. In this lesson, they perpetrate the same fraud against Abimelech. Let's go ahead and begin to work through the text. Genesis chapter 20, verses 1 and 2. Now Abraham journeyed from there toward the land of the Negev and settled between Kadesh and Shur. Then he sojourned in Gerar. Abraham said to his wife, Sarah, she is my sister. So Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. Abraham and Sarah travel to Gerar. Gerar is a city southeast of the city of Gaza. And we're all familiar with the Gaza Strip from the current news and the war between Israel and Gaza. This little city, Gerar, has a king by the name of Abimelech. Abimelech means my father, the king. And the king is rather a father to the people in the area of Gerar. Now, here we go again. Abraham and Sarah implement the deception that they implemented years ago in Egypt. Now, when they implement this deception, they are children of God. There is no doubt that this is the case. In Genesis chapter 15 and in verse 6, it says, Abraham believed the Lord, and he reckoned it to him as righteousness. Here Abraham was justified by grace through faith. And as you may recall, I took the position of Calvin, in which Calvin says that when Abraham and Sarah went down into Egypt because of the famine in Canaan, in Genesis chapter 12, and perpetrated the fraud there, this was years before Abraham was justified by grace through faith. It was 8 to 10 years previous to that time. Now, a number of years later, after Abraham and Sarah have lived as adopted children of God, they once again enter into the same deception with the king of Gerar. Why do they enter into this deception once again? Well, it could be that both Abraham and Sarah are fearful of the people of the land, and especially of Abimelech, king of Gerar. The fear of men overtakes them, and they are not faithful to the promises of God. And so once again, they enter into this deception. Emotions are very interesting, are they not? Years ago, my wife and I lost a child when I was in Vietnam, and Irma was back in her home community in Fowler, Kansas. And then here, a couple of years ago, our youngest daughter lost a child. And when we received that news, I was standing in our kitchen looking out into our backyard, grieving the loss of this grandchild. But as I was grieving the loss of this grandchild, I suddenly realized I was grieving the loss of my own child, the child that Irma and I had lost years ago when I was in Vietnam. Grief and sorrow and fear, these emotions can be long-standing. And in this case, the emotion of fear seems to dominate the situation. Let's go back to the text. But God came to Abimelech in a dream of the night and said to him, "Behold, you are a dead man because of the woman whom you have taken, for she is married." Now Abimelech had not come near her, and he said, "Lord, will you slay a nation even though blameless? Did he not himself say to me, 'She is my sister'? And she herself said, 'He is my brother'? In the integrity of my heart and the innocence of my hands, I have done this." Then God said to him in the dream, "Yes, I know that in the integrity of your heart you have done this, and I also kept you from sinning against me. Therefore, I did not let you touch her. Now, therefore, restore the man's wife, for he is a prophet, and he will pray for you, and you will live. But if you do not restore her, now know that you shall surely die, you and all who are yours." God comes to Abimelech, the king of Gerar, and rebukes him. God comes to him in a dream. This is how God would often come to the prophets of old. God would come to the prophets of old in a dream and give them a message. And so it is that God comes to Abimelech, the king of Gerar, and brings him a message. There's a little irony here, is there not? Abraham is the prophet. And as we will see, Abimelech rebukes Abraham in accordance with the word of the Lord. And Abimelech acts as the prophet, whereas the text tells us that Abraham is the prophet. Nevertheless, understand what takes place here. God is the protagonist. Abimelech is the antagonist. God rebukes Abimelech, and Abimelech offers excuses. At least he gives reasons, does he not? He says in verse 4, "Lord, will you slay a nation even though blameless? Did he not himself say to me, 'She is my sister,' and she herself said, 'He is my brother'? In the integrity of my heart and in innocence, the innocence of my hands, I have done this." I'm innocent. I'm not the one at fault. You see, Abimelech, after receiving the message from the Lord, offers excuses. And this is a standard approach, is it not? In the garden, Adam and Eve offered excuses when God sought them out in the garden. "Adam, where are you? What have you done? How do you know that you're naked? The woman whom you gave me, she caused me to sin." And in approaching the woman, "The devil made me do it." Always offering excuses, shifting the blame. Beware, friends. When God comes to you in his word, or comes to you through a messenger, consider carefully what is being said. And be very slow to offer excuses. Be quick to hear and slow to speak, as James says. This is wisdom. And if you are going to be wise, you must carefully consider the words that are brought to you and examine your own heart and not pass them off as though you are absolutely innocent. In this case, Abimelech is not innocent. He took Sarah into his household. And now God rebukes him and instructs him to send the woman back to Abraham. Now notice Verse 8. So Abimelech arose early in the morning and called all his servants and told all these things in their hearing, and the men were greatly frightened. Why were they frightened? Because God came to Abimelech, the head of their nation, and issued a warning and issued a rebuke, and fear came upon the land. And this fear precipitated action. Here again, it could be that Abraham feared the people of Gerar and feared Abimelech and did not have a proper fear of God, but rather feared men rather than God, and so entered into this deception. But now God comes, and fear, the fear of God, comes across the land. It's a good thing. It's a good thing to have a proper fear and reverence for God. And when we have, when you and I have, a proper reverence and fear for God, you and I will act obediently to the Word of God and trust God rather than trusting ourselves to men. And this is exactly what Abraham did. He trusted himself to men. And now God comes, and a great fear comes upon the people of the land. You can sense the plot that arises as God rebukes Abimelech, and Abimelech reports his dream to his servants, and now a climax is reached in the plot as a great fear comes across the land. And as I say, this fear precipitates action. Verses 9 and following. Then Abimelech called Abraham and said to him, "What have you done to us? And how have I sinned against you that you have brought on me and on my kingdom this great sin?" You see, as a result of the fear of God coming upon Abimelech, Abimelech recognizes his sin. No, he didn't enter into a carnal sin of adultery, but yet he entered into sin by taking Abram's wife, even in innocence. And when we sin in innocence, and God reveals our sin to us, we must admit our sin. Back to the text. "You have done to me things that ought not to be done," says Abimelech to Abraham. And Abimelech said to Abraham, "What have you encountered that you have done this thing? What is it that you have seen? What is it that exists in your life and in your past that causes you to sin against me the way you have?" Now listen to Abraham. Abraham offers reasons. He gives excuses. Isn't it interesting? I already mentioned the irony here of Abraham being declared a prophet by God, but Abimelech being the one that receives the vision and in turn now rebukes Abraham. And God is still the protagonist. And in this section of the text, Abraham is the antagonist. Abraham must be corrected. God is working through Abimelech to correct Abraham. Listen to the reasons and the excuses that Abraham gives. Verse 11. Abraham said, "Because I thought surely there is no fear of God in this place, and they will kill me because of my wife." Oh, there's no fear of the Lord in this place. The only problem is, God did bring fear upon the land. And now Abimelech has rebuked Abraham. Another little twist of irony. Abraham said, "Because I thought surely there is no fear of God in this place, and they will kill me because of my wife. Besides, she actually is my sister, the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother, and she became my wife. And it came about when God caused me to wander from my father's house that I said to her, 'This is the kindness which you will show to me. Everywhere we go, say of me, he is my brother.'" You see, when Abraham, years ago, went to Haran with his father and then pressed on, Abraham and Sarah entered into this conspiracy. And then when they went down into Egypt, they implemented the conspiracy and deceived Pharaoh. Now, years later, when you look at the time frame, earlier on when God spoke to Abraham, he was about 75 years old. A little bit later in the text, we find out that Abraham is 100 years old. And so Abraham is nearly 100 years old. And it's over 20 years. Over 20 years. And the intervening adoption of Abraham and Sarah by God that takes place, and this deception persists. This desire to perpetrate a fraud persists on into the life of Abraham and Sarah as they are adopted children of God. And why do they do this? Because of a fear, because of the emotion of fear and distress that appears to be consuming their lives. Again, back to the text. Verse 13, "And it came about when God caused me to wander from my father's house that I said to her, 'This is the kindness which you will show to me. Everywhere we go, say to me, he is my brother.'" Having been justified by grace through faith, having been adopted into the family of God, and having become a child of God, does not change the previous commitment to this deception, this half-truth that Abraham and Sarah are engaging in. Back to the text. Verses 14 and following. "Abimelech then took sheep and oxen and male and female servants and gave them to Abraham and restored his wife Sarah to him. Abimelech said, 'Behold, my land is before you. Settle wherever you please.' So Sarah said, 'Behold,' to Sarah he said, 'Behold, I have given your brother 1,000 pieces of silver. Behold, it is your vindication before all who are with you, and before all men you are cleared.'" I'm giving you your brother and your husband the price of your vindication, and you are cleared of any sin in my land. I have not touched you, and I want all the people of the land to know that this is the case. You and Abraham may settle anywhere you please in the land. And then the end of the text. Abraham prayed to God, and God healed Abimelech and his wife and his maids so that they bore children. For the Lord had closed fast all the wombs of the household of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. You notice that here's the closure and resolution of the narrative. The problem that God had with Abimelech is resolved. And the problem that God had with Abraham is resolved. There are two main portions of a dialogue in this narrative. As God comes to Abimelech in a dream, and then as Abimelech comes to Abraham and rebukes Abraham. There's the interchange between God and Abimelech, and there's the exchange between Abimelech and Abraham. And as Abraham is rebuked by Abimelech, we begin to see resolution take place, and at the end of the text, we have final resolution. Think of the emotions involved in this situation. Just think of the fear that dominated Abraham's life. Think of the fear that came over Abimelech. And consider how God dealt with Abraham and with Abimelech. And consider more particularly how God dealt with Abraham and with Sarah as adopted children. Their sin and deception continued and was implemented well after they became adopted children of God. Can this happen in your life? It certainly can. Can sins which were prevalent in your life prior to your being adopted as a child of God, can these sins carry over into your life when you are an adopted child of God? Surely this is the case. Now, remember the analogy that we are drawing in this short series of lessons. The analogy between God's adopting us as children of God and our adopting children into our own families. And consider the emotions that might be present in a little child prior to their being adopted. They've been given up by their biological parents. They've been placed in an orphanage. There might be great grief as a result of the separation from their biological mother and their biological father. There might be fear resident in their hearts because of a lack of understanding as to what has taken place, and a fear with regard to the future. Now they've been placed in an orphanage. And along come a good-hearted couple, a good-hearted Christian couple, and they adopt this little child, this little boy or girl, and take this little boy or girl into their home. And after the adoption, they realize that there is a good bit of grief and fear and anger in the life of this little child. And this little child is unable to love and cuddle with and act like a loving child in the new household. This is a common occurrence. It's radical disorder, radical attachment disorder. The sins prior to, the difficulties prior to, the emotions prior to the adoption are carried over into the adoptive state. This should not surprise us, because we ourselves, as Christians, as adopted children of God, often manifest the same sins and the same characteristics and the same emotions that were present in our lives prior to our being adopted as children of God. Here's a lesson for us. A lesson in which we, as adopted children of God, need to learn discernment with regard to how God is dealing with us. And we can carry those lessons over into how we ought to be recognizing how we should be willing to deal with adopted children. The lesson really is about how God dealt with Abraham and Sarah. And we can learn about how God deals with us as adopted children of God, and how we can in turn learn about dealing with adopted children. Thanks for listening.